discussion, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this week, we watched You Should Have Left. My name is Danielle, and here are the mad artists, as well as our guests, that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, it's Samuel, and please don't leave.
Yo, it's John!
And our guests for today, one of which put this in, not the hat, I keep saying the hat, it's the box.
Box.
It's not a hat anymore. Go ahead and introduce yourselves, guys.
Hi, it was me, I'm Colton. I put the thing in the hat box.
In the hat box.
I'm here for emotional support for everyone, I'm Mimi.
Okay, so obviously, Colton, you had seen this before. How were you exposed to this, I guess?
So I am an avid follower of psychological horror as a whole, and when Blumhouse did this, that's the only Twitter page I follow, is Blumhouse. And they were like, hey, new movie out, you should go watch it. And I was like, maybe. And I watched it with her, and it was mind-blowing how much I enjoyed. I thought it was super good. So I came across, and I was like, you know who might like this? Literally like a month ago, when you were like, put things in the box. I was like, you know what she might like? That.
Absolutely. This is so up my alley. And we're back in with all that banging. You and Mimi were the only ones who had seen it. Mimi, what did you think of it when you first saw it?
I'm very easily terrified of horror movies. I've come really far from hiding behind the pillow, basically the whole movie. to where now I can at least view it and then just close my eyes and ears. close my ears. But I really liked it. I like the more psychological stuff. Because if things are just gory, just to be gory, I don't really enjoy that.
Me neither.
and I thought it was really well done. Obviously, I think the set and all that is absolutely insane. So I think they did a really good job. Like, even though I'm not a horror person, like, I genuinely enjoyed watching it.
Yeah. What about you, John? You hadn't seen this before. What did you think going into this?
Honestly, I had no idea what to think, other than the fact that, you know, it was obviously going to be some sort of mental or physical trap of sorts, of just a loop of some kind. I didn't expect it to be as... It reminded me a lot of if Interstellar went in the absolute horror direction.
Ooh, that's a good call.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it.
Wow.
Like, if it went in, like, an absolute horror direction, and I love the subtle hint to, like, don't know if it's biblical lore or some sort of mythos, but that little callback was cool. I've heard of that mythos before. I don't remember where it's from, though.
Oh, the Devil's Tower?
Yeah.
What about you, Samuel? What did you think this was going to be?
Yeah, I mean, I really had no idea what it was going to be. From the title and from the fact that Colton put it in, I kind of figured it was going to be something more serious, and we were sitting there trying to figure out, you know, what our night was going to look like. and so I pulled up the movie just to see what genre it was, and I saw psychological horror. And I was very excited because I like good horror. If it's I either like good horror or campy horror, and other than that, I'm not a big horror fan. But if it's good, then I'm very much into it. So yeah, I was super excited going into it. I've liked some of Blumhouse's stuff. Some of their stuff is very eh.
Well, yeah, they've had some hits, they've had some misses,
yeah,
for sure.
But yeah, no, I didn't really have any expectations going in, other than I like both of the main lead actors, and I was just kind of here for it.
Yeah. I knew, after I just looked at the title for more than, I guess, 3 seconds and saw that Colton had put it in, I was like, well, it's gonna be something freaky, and that means I'm excited, which was awesome. And I was upstairs. No one heard me because I ran upstairs, I think, to, like, put on my slippers or something. And Samuel from downstairs, I hear say, ooh, it's psychological horror. And from upstairs, I screamed, yay! And, like, freaked out because I was really excited about that. I had no clue what it was going to be about. I don't know how you got, it's going to be a time loop from the title.
I said a loop. I didn't say a time loop.
But no, I was just fascinated, and especially once I saw, you know, this was a very different role that I've ever seen Amanda Seyfried play. She usually goes into, like, the princess kind of role. I know with Mamma Mia, with Les Mis, that's always been kind of her thing. So seeing her in this role, I like, I guess for the first time realize that I actually like her as an actor. Because I never, like, disliked her. It was never like she's bad. It was just like, oh, you got just kind of like one trick and that's, you know, you do well at that trick. And now I know that's not true and that's awesome.
There's another movie I've seen her in. I can't remember the name of it. I'll look it up. But that I feel like you would like, because that was that movie for me. Where I watched it and I was all like, oh, wow, she's actually a really good actor.
Yeah, where she's not just, like, Mrs. Princess. Like, that's awesome. Yeah, this movie came out in 2020. It was directed and written by, I'm so gonna mispronounce it, David Coep. And based on the book written by Daniel Kelman, and stars Kevin Bacon as Theo and Amanda Seyfried as Susanna. You can watch this with a Peacock subscription. You can buy or rent it on Prime Video, Vudu, Apple TV, YouTube, Redbox, or Google Play. It's everywhere. Excuse me. And the IMDb summary for this says, a former banker, his actress wife, and their spirited daughter book a vacation at an isolated modern home in the Welsh countryside where nothing is quite as it seems. Samuel.
Alrighty, so first off, the name of that movie was Chloe. Very good movie with Liam Neeson and her. So, our director, David Kep, is probably how I'd say it.
That's probably correct.
I'd never heard of before, but he is actually one of the most prolific Hollywood screenwriters of all time.
Really?
Some of his filmography is insane. He wrote the entire original Jurassic Park trilogy.
Oh, okay.
He wrote the first Mission Impossible.
Okay.
He wrote the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
Wow.
Okay. He wrote War of the Worlds.
Oh.
He wrote Zathura.
He wrote Zathura?
Zathura?
That's a deep cut. Bro,
that is a deep cut.
And this is just picks from his filmography. He has a much bigger filmography, so I just picked his biggest stuff that I knew off the top of my head. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Wow.
Angels and Demons.
Okay.
Ryan Shadow Recruit. The Mummy. And Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Wow. Which is the upcoming
one. That's the upcoming one, so yeah.
He's a powerhouse.
Yeah.
And, so that's his writing credits. His directing credits, I've never heard of any of them. So kind of my idea is that he probably makes the money off the writing and then directs his more art house films that he wants to do. But he's directed the films Mordecai, Premium Rush, Ghost Town, Secret Window, Stir of Echoes, and The Trigger Effect.
Well, Stir of Echoes is one that was mentioned a lot when I was going through the fun facts and stuff, because that was the last time that this director and Kevin Bacon worked together in 1999 was on Stir of Echoes. And apparently it's a similar vibe, which makes sense. So, like, I may have to go and watch that one because I really liked this movie. And apparently this is a little bit similar. Yeah. Is that all of your information for me?
That's everything I got.
Okay. Well, are there any, I guess, sort of overarching points that anyone wants to talk about before we dive into the plot here?
Yes. So I was telling Samuel about this, and a few other people heard it last night. I think you had already walked out of the room.
Probably.
When I said this, but the interesting thing to me about this movie, and just to preface this, one of my favorite things about horror, and specifically psychological horror, is set design. Set design cinematography and the way that they handle that, because that can change the effect of a really good shot or a really bad shot. A lot of the set was built crooked and built to look larger and longer than it's supposed to be. And on top of that, if you watch a lot of the panning shots, a lot of the edges warp, and it gives kind of a nauseating feel, this kind of like almost like a panicky feel, which I freaking love. That's so cool. Like, oh man, it's just so cool. And it's present throughout the entirety of the movie. And it kind of gives this weird, like, background feeling of being trapped.
And we're back in. And we have a regular here.
A wild Tyler appeared. What's up, guys?
We were just talking about overarching thoughts before getting into the plot.
Oh, okay, perfect. So
if you have any.
Yeah, this movie's mid. No.
Colton's silently plotting your death on the other side of the table.
In case you can't tell, I'm in love with this movie.
This movie's phenomenal. This movie's really, really good. I really appreciate, like, I like movies that really take their time and they're just like, we're just going to give you a lot of content to enjoy. I really, really appreciated that this movie came in, said what it needed to say, showed you what it wanted to show you, and left. It was very concise. The writing was very tight. Not a whole lot of holes or gaps or anything crazy like that. It told a fun, tight, engaging, interesting story that I thought was really that I thought was really engaging. I walked away. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this I mean, I was already just excited going in because I saw psychological horror and I was excited. And especially once it popped up with Blumhouse, because I've seen some hits and some misses from it, I was like, well, this must be a hit. Because Colton put it in the hat, which means I'm excited.
Unless it wasn't.
Unless it wasn't, and this was actually supposed to be a bad pick, in which case you missed the mark big time.
Speaking from experience with a lot of Blumhouse stuff, and after watching the new Halloween movies, I would never put a bad Blumhouse movie in that box. I mean, it was torture, so I would not put that.
Yeah, their misses are pretty hard misses, but their hits are really good. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and dive in here if no one else has any just kind of like, you know, big, my brain isn't working this morning, like big thoughts.
If anyone had the big speak, say now, say word, fam.
My brain just like stopped working.
I would say the only thing that is like when I watch psychological horrors now since I've been forced to watch many of them, is I think about like after I finish the movie, I like to think about it, the movie as if none of that actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's a movie.
Like he's just an insane person, or like none of that horror actually happened. It was just all in his mind or someone's mind. And then what message I receive in that instance as well. And a lot of times they're not that far off, or it's just an interesting twist.
Interesting.
Well, and for me, you know, ever since I forget what movie or if it was Haunting of Hill House, or if it was a specific movie, I don't remember. But I started, you know, a few years ago looking at horror very differently. Because, you know, once I stopped being scared of it, because I was scared of it for my whole childhood. And then once I got into high school, suddenly, like, a switch flipped and me and my sister swapped roles. And then she was scared of everything. And I was like, yes, let's watch all of it. But I would watch it mostly just looking for, like, I want super scary stuff, like, scare me, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I don't know what movie it was or what show it was, but something changed that for me where now I always... It might have been, honestly, Hereditary. I think Hereditary is what switched it. Because I started looking at horror instead of just, let's find the scariest, creepiest thing, as what it should be, which is, how are they using horror to portray a message? Like, because that's what it should be. It should be not just gratuitous gore and fear and jump scares. It should be like, we're making this and we're using horror as the conduit for something. And so what is it?
Not a fan of the Saw franchise, I take it.
I do not like Saw. It's so dumb.
You can miss me with that nonsense.
Guilty pleasures are body horror and gore films.
That's fair.
So like, I won't watch them to be like, this is good entertainment. It'll be like, this is really bad entertainment, but it's fun.
I mean, I've got my guilty pleasure horror stuff too.
Yeah. But I do, that brings up an interesting question. Out of this movie, what was the message that you got?
I mean, for me, so it's less even the message, but it's more of just like, how are, like what is the purpose of the horror, essentially? Even if it's not the message itself, how, like, what is the, you know, they're using it as a tool. What tool are they using it for? And so in this, it was clearly the idea of, because as I was sitting there, I was kind of like going through a bunch of different stuff in my head, being like, okay, so they're using it for this and for this and for this. It was, in my opinion, just him being completely lost ever since everything that had happened with his past wife and with how everybody views him. And with the fact that not only is he lost and just like sad that everyone thinks that, everyone's right.
Yeah.
And knowing that secret of like, everybody's right, I'm trapping myself in this like web of almost trying to convince myself, even though that's not possible because I know it's not true. And so like all of the doors and him getting lost is him getting lost in his own mind.
Yeah.
And like not being able to escape his past and who he really is. And of course, you know, I knew it. And I was so happy that it was true because the guy, the creepy guy, Stettler, I was like, that has to be him in prosthetics. Yeah. That has to be him in prosthetics.
Is it?
It looks just like him.
Okay.
And then when he starts beating him with the thing and his face starts changing, I was like, oh, yes, this is what I wanted.
That's so sick.
But yeah, so in my opinion, that's what they were like using the horror for as like that tool.
I thought the message was don't kill people.
don't murder.
Yeah, murder bad.
It's a very symbolic movie, and it very much touches on the idea of like you have to be honest with yourself and come to terms with the things that you've done, because you cannot be at peace unless you accept your mistakes. Mm-hmm. Type thing.
took the words right out of my mouth. I was memeing around, but that's exactly what I took from it. And that's cool, right? Because, like, there are some movies where it's, like, it's open to interpretation. You know what I mean? Like, was he dead the whole time? You know what I mean? Like, what does this movie really mean, you know? And then there are movies that are just like, no, this is what it's trying to say, and this is, and it did a good job of conveyance and conveying that kind of message to us, like, as the viewer, where it's like, you could look at it as a scary, you know, a scary mind movie, or you could be like, no, like, this is a whole thing, an allegory for guilt. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool.
For guilt and for, you know, essentially attempting self-deception. Yeah. But, no, this movie also did one of my favorite things. It's what saved, before they brought in the third and the fourth movie, it's what saved the first two Insidious movies for me, was when they did the same thing in the second one, if you remember the ending, of suddenly realizing that time is basically just an illusion, and, like, it was him, like, moving through and affecting all of these things. I love that. I that's such a, like, ooh, and now I love this thing for me. But I was saying to Samuel during the movie that I genuinely think the writer of the book, as well as, you know, I guess by proxy, David Koepp, had to have gotten some inspiration.
The writer of the book?
Yeah, this is based on a book.
I somehow missed that.
Yeah. But this had to have gotten some inspiration from Haunting of Hill House. Like, the book, not the show. Oh, yeah. Because the book talks about how the house is just wrong. How it, like, as soon as you step through its doors, it's trying to keep you there. It's trying to devour you. That concept of the Devil Tower and all of that. And the angles being wrong is such a Haunting of Hill House thing from the books that I was, the whole time I was like, it's Haunting of Hill House, but not. Like, what's going on?
Well,
like,
it's also possible if that's, you know, if that's sort of historical lore of the Devil Tower, it's possible that
they both,
it goes
took
back even further, and the Haunting of Hill House took inspiration from the mythos of
very
the
possible
Tower.
Yeah,
they're officially coining it because this movie is fitting with it, because it has Kevin Bacon. This is now the 6 degrees of Mike Flanagan. It
the 6 degrees of Mike Flanagan. Oh, it's all Mike Flanagan.
I would say, I like, for me, I feel like I took a little bit different message from it. I thought the message was, when you're faced with unconditional love, you have to take a true look at yourself, and it forces that.
Yeah.
So
that's really,
like, when his child, who's a child, says, "Dad, like, I'll love you no matter what,"
mm-hmm.
is when he actually starts to realize, and he has to be truthful with himself, with face with unconditional love from a child.
Well, yeah. And that's, you know, that was my favorite line from the movie, was when, you know, quote unquote Stetler, but at this point he's just Kevin Bacon, is looking at him as, like, you know, you see yourself in your children. That's the thing about mirrors, always are going to just, like, it's going to just be you.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the moment that woke him up, because he's like, oh my God, she's going to, like, grow up believing this lie that I've told her. She's going to potentially do the same thing, because if I tell her the truth, then I'm instilling it, and, like, all these things, where he's finally just coming to the conclusion of, like, I have to go. Like, I can't stay here and affect her life anymore, which I loved, and we talked about this a little bit. I loved the way that they represented just the family, because so many movies don't make families feel like actual families, even if they are, where they're a little too happy, or they're just a little too, like, you know, kind of like postcard, or they're too bad, to where it's like, yes, there are families like that, but it's more interesting to see the dynamic of, like, there are issues, but this is, like, a real thing, so they're not just gonna, like, immediately have a huge argument. Like, it may be a little more passive-aggressive, it may be just a short little moment, it may be her throwing a fit and then immediately apologizing like she did in the kitchen, which is a very, like, actually real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just love that.
Well, you know, I mean, we don't want to bog it down, because I know we gotta keep moving. but the one thing this movie does very well is it does not put words where it does not need to have them. So, like, for instance, when he's saying goodbye to his daughter when he puts her in the back of the car at the very end, there's no long, heartfelt speech. It's just a bye, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's very real.
That's a really good point, because that was something that stood out to me, too, is him just looking at her. It wasn't, like, some big, you know, I want you to know that I love you, and here's all the things that I need to say. It's just a look.
Mm-hmm.
She knows, he knows, she knows, and that's enough. Yeah. And it's like, oh, that's...
It's very good.
It's very smart.
So good.
Well, let's dive into the plot here. So, Theodore Conroy is a retired banker married to a younger woman, Susanna, an actress, and they have a daughter named Ella. One afternoon, when Theo attempts to visit Susanna on set, he is denied entry, which...
That was a great scene.
I had looked up a few things just because, especially with horror... With horror and with, like, you know, sort of, like, I guess just intense topic movies, I tend to look up the, like, content beforehand just so that I know if specifically, like, assault is going to be shown, because that's just very sensitive for me, and so I would just rather have it spoiled so when it starts happening, I can just, like, you know, stop watching for a second. But, so I knew that was coming, I just didn't know how, because they didn't do, it was on, like, IMDb or something, and it was, like, it didn't give a spoiler of, like, when it happens or why it's happening, it was just, like, a woman moans from off screen, and I was, like, okay, interesting.
like that's all right. I'm fine with the horror state.
Well, it was even funnier because Samuel, when this movie was like starting and he saw like, you know, Amanda Seyfried was in it, he was like, "Oh, she's hot." And so as soon as that happened, I was just kind of looking at him like as that's going on off screen.
That's funny.
Oh, it was very funny. Well, while waiting to be granted authorization, he hears Susanna doing a sex scene and is visibly annoyed. Susanna later apologizes to Theo, attributing his obstruction to a misunderstanding, and she tells him she has put him on the approved list. Theo informs Susanna that the set security guard recognized him. Susanna teases Theo, telling him that they think you're dangerous. Soon after, they book a vacation in Wales, but there is something strange about the house. Time passed unusually fast, and they both experience bad nightmares. They also discover that neither one of them made the booking, each thinking the other did it, which that was really cool. I love that.
Wait, is that true?
Yeah, because at that one point,
I didn't catch that.
When he was talking about when they were in the bathroom and he was like, "Hey, can you call tomorrow?" She was like, "I mean, I can, but why me?" And he was like, "Well, it's in your name, right?" And she was like,
that.
"And she was like, no, I thought it was in your name."
Yeah, they deliberately.
In the when they're arguing about telling the daughter, he goes, "You sent me the link." She goes, "No, you sent me the link."
And yeah. They did such a good job of just
that.
Blowing past it, but I caught it and I was like, oh.
Wow, okay. That's so cool.
Yeah, the house, because that's why, you know, even in the shot of the computer saying, like, you know, booking confirmed, there wasn't anybody sitting at the computer.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the screen changed from, like, you know, the thing to saying, like, confirmed your booking and, like, all of that.
You know, I'm so glad you guys are observant because, like, that's half of this movie is small detail.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ugh, I love it. There also weren't a whole lot of, like, fun facts for this movie. There were at least none, like, there were two that were interesting. So I'm actually just going to kind of throw them in. You were talking about set design. Mm-hmm. So... I'll get back to the plot, but I want to just throw these in now because there's not many, so I don't want to make a whole section. So it's actually a house. So the house that they rented, at least like the outside, and some of the inside that they used, it's called Life House. It's a vacation home that is in Wales, and it was designed by a British architect in collaboration with a British philosopher. And was completed in 2016. And the philosopher is quoted to say, "With Lifehouse, we were looking to reinvent the monastery for a secular modern age, based upon the concept of a retreat to take us back to the earliest days of Buddhism in the East and of Stoic philosophy in the West."
What?
Which I thought was super cool and very clear in the way it looked, like for the scenes that were both outside and using the parts of the house on the inside. No, I love that.
That's very heady. I love that.
There's also a not heady fun fact, which is the only other one I have. Kevin Bacon replaced Nicolas Cage in this movie.
What?
Oh my god!
No, I
want to see the Nicolas Cage version.
Ruin the movie for me.
That was the only other fun fact that was worth stating, because it was originally Nicolas Cage and Kevin Bacon replaced.
That is a very interesting thing to hear on the design of the house, because looking at it from the outside, it doesn't register until you hear something like that. It looks very cathedral. It looks very much like postmodern church.
Well, and they even talk about that. They're like, you know, an ant doesn't know what a cathedral is. Is that like,
I
idea?
Really well, when they said that, I thought it was going to be an Eldritch Horror. I was just like, oh, I get it. This isn't Infernal. This is Abyssal.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that it was very fun to listen to you guys be like, if this is this, if this is this, and then being like, it could be any of those things. It doesn't specify. You know, it's the best thing you can do in a horror where there's a creature or an entity or a spirit is not show it.
Yeah.
That is the best thing you can do.
Yes, because yes, we yes. never actually see what it is or what created this place. Like, Stettler is kind of talked about, but we find out that, you know, that's just essentially, like, the projection of his own mind. So it's like, what is this entity?
Yeah. Right.
Which is really cool. Old horror watching Danielle would not have liked that, but this version does.
Because, I mean, the whole monster thing is that the unknown is what's scary, and that's what mm-hmm. it plagues on. Because if you throw the monster in there, at that point, you just turned your horror into a thriller.
Your yeah. imagination is so much more powerful than your eyes. Like,
yeah.
You can
yeah.
imagine something so much scarier. So yeah. it's so cool that they didn't just, like, and
cop
they didn't
and
pull like the mama
yeah.
move where like say, suddenly here comes the monster and
yeah.
it's like okay
like Mama or like A Quiet Place where you only get slight glimpses of it and then you see it up close and you're like that's not that scary.
Well, one night Ella sees the shadow of a man on the wall. The next morning, while Theo writes in his meditation journal, she asks Susanna why people dislike Theo. Susanna reluctantly explains that Theo's first wife drowned in the bathtub and people suspected that he killed her, though he was acquitted at trial.
Super perceptive and insightful little girl.
Yeah, that girl was very, very smart. Like, the whole... And it wasn't even, like, unrealistic because I have known, like, very specific kids to be that level of, like, understanding what's going on and having the right questions, which I thought was really cool because they could have just made her not even sound like a kid at all, but they didn't do that.
Yeah.
Well,
when she opened with swearing, that was, I obviously can't say it on the podcast, but, you know, something scary's happening, some mischief's afoot, and she's just like, and she just curses, it's
so
like, oh, you're
thing.
Immediately my favorite.
Here's the thing about that. I wondered what that was, because the second that happened and they never showed her face saying it, I was like, I have a feeling that's not her. Mm-hmm. And later in the movie, we find out that she's a mirror of Kevin Bacon. And he had those moments where he saw something and said exactly that, those words, like straight
because
up.
Because it was his dream.
Because it was his dream the whole time. And
yo.
So
isn't it fun to have smart friends?
It's so great.
So as
wow.
soon as that happened and it didn't show her
that.
Mouth saying it, I was like, she didn't say it. So where's that going to come in? And then I was watching and later when he said that exact thing, like seeing something down the hall, I was like, it was him.
That's
he
pretty
that.
Slick.
There was a
that's pretty slick.
Callback when he's standing in the kitchen and he sees her having the second phone and it does the same zoom pan.
The exact
into his
same
goes,
thing.
Darn it.
It's uh-huh. the same exact thing.
And get out of here. Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. That's
yep.
so
same
cool.
camera
I love
shot
that. I love that. That's
yep.
so cool.
So good.
Yes. While in town for supplies, the shopkeeper asks if he's met Stettler, which the shopkeeper. Might have been my favorite character,
so
just
brilliant.
Because he's so weird and
the whole thing of like I need some butter and he walks the butter, comes back I need bread and he walks back and gets the bread.
It reminded me so much of Tyler hasn't seen Zootopia. Have you guys seen Zootopia?
Oh, I love
the DMV scene
yes. Yes.
with the sloths.
It's nice. I love it.
That's what that reminded me. Okay. He reminded me so much of a combination of both the fox and the rabbit where he's like, yeah, I need some bread, I need some butter, and the guy's already walking, and he's like, okay, and he just gets butter, brings yeah. it back, and he's like, well, I also need bread, goes and gets it, he comes back, I need eggs, too, and he's like, or he goes and gets the bread, and he's coming back, and he's like, all right, here comes the bread, now I also need eggs, like, trying to be patient, but, like, having trouble with it, oh, it's
so funny. I sympathize with that bit. More.
You sympathized with his character the entire movie.
I really did. Like, I'm sitting here just like, dang, that's kind of scary because, like, save for the whole, you know, murder, I get it. I'm sitting here, he's just, like, getting all impatient. I'm like, I'd be impatient, too. You see him, like, really struggling, and I'm just like, I'd be struggling too. Shoot.
And to be fair, it wasn't murder. It was just like negligent manslaughter.
Yeah.
Which, negligent. I mean, okay.
Is that how you would rule that?
Probably.
From a legal perspective, yeah.
But what about from a moral perspective?
That's tough.
Area.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a gray area.
Allowing death.
Allowing death is.
But not causing it.
Yeah,
but is that then by extension murder, or is it? It does it have to be something else?
I would say it's not. Not to get too moral into it, but I would say probably not murder because I feel like murder is more personal.
Well,
yeah.
isn't it? Aren't there degrees? There's like first
yes.
degree murder, second
so,
degree murder.
Well,
so wouldn't this be like third degree?
Yeah, legally, there's no way that this would fall under the umbrella of murder.
Yeah.
It's definitely from a more moral question, but for me, I feel like morally, I feel like murder is active.
Yeah.
And this was very passive.
This was passive.
Yeah. But this, that particular scene that you're talking about now led into the only scene in the movie I dislike.
Which is?
Really?
He walks outside of the car.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There. It's so out of place. It's janky. It feels weird.
Wait. Say that again.
The woman at the car that was like, oh, you're at the house up the street, right?
And it never comes back into play.
Yeah.
I think that was probably, and this is just a guess, I feel like that was probably them attempting to try and further the narrative of, ooh, you in Scary House, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And they probably had, like, a deleted scene or two that kind of, like, followed up on it, with where other townspeople were like, ooh, you in Scary House, to try and, like, set the stage, and they're just like, this is too heavy-handed.
You know what that scene reminded me of? Troll 2.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Just all the, like,
yeah, Trolls World Tour was
crazy. Yes.
Yeah.
You're insane.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to decide, I guess, how I feel about that, because so the part of my brain that wants to, like, figure it out is saying, okay, the woman clearly looked, like, weirdly kind of glamorous for this small town. She's, like, in nice clothes and these, like, big sunglasses, but she's, like, closer to his age. Mm-hmm. And I almost wondered if it was, like, almost a projection of him, like, and his insecurities about his age in comparison to his wife's, potentially, and seeing, like, oh, well, with this woman, it could be acceptable, but, and that's why it was such a short, weird moment, is it was just a thought he had.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. That was the only thing I could think of that could potentially be, like, what it was.
It was just such a it was a scene that does the whole, like, horror cliche of, like, the random creepy person that warns you about the house or warns you about the place, and you're like, this movie's just so good, it feels like, even though it could be some deeper thing, it feels unnecessary.
I did like, though, that they kind of chucked the horror cliche away mm-hmm. with his line of, like, yeah, I'm in the house, yeah, I know, it's crazy, like, you know, basically yeah. just finishing the conversation for her, which I thought was cool.
This movie does that, it did that a few times, which mm-hmm. I really liked.
Well, it did, one of my favorite parts of the movie was when bad things were happening, they just went through that hallway sequence, and he's just like, we're leaving. We'll walk. We're leaving.
Yeah.
Right?
What about my stuff?
We'll get new stuff. We're leaving.
Very realistic response.
And it's just like, yeah, at that point, I would probably leave too, right? And so they're going to leg it. And when they realize, like, oh, yeah. Like, his realization of, we only went in one direction. We're back here. Something evil's afoot.
So here was my take on that. My take was not that they ended up back at the house. I think that one scene was from the girl's perspective. I think he started walking, they got freezing, and he realized, oh, we actually can't do this.
Interesting.
That was my take on that scene.
Dude, the whole scene of them going up to the door and him like...
Yes! And her just being like, why don't you just unlock it?
And he's like, oh. Dude,
that was a very good subversion,
really,
for sure.
A horror cliche just, subversion.
Well, that was also a thought I had about that things. Like that walking, you know, them walking outside. My interpretation of that was that they never actually went outside. Mm-hmm. Was that, if y'all have ever seen, don't spoil anything because I want to put it in the box, yeah. Oculus.
You mean the part where they...
the idea of, like, anything could be in your head,
yeah.
and you have no way of knowing. And so, like, and that's kind of what I thought is, like, how much of this is happening and how much of this is literally just in their minds and they're yeah. just, like, sitting or like, you know... They're not even actually going to die from cold. They're inside the house right now, but they're being, like, led to believe that that's what's happening.
Which, that scene is the conversion of so many setups. Because, like, at the beginning with the whole thermostat being broken
yep.
upstairs.
Mm-hmm. And so they have to go upstairs.
Go
yep.
upstairs to, and it sets them up to recreate that photo immediately
yep.
and perfectly.
Yep.
It's such a brilliant way to write a plot. It's just so good.
Also, two things about that. One is, I think it could have been a thing, like, for escapism. Like, when you're trying to,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, he was like, all right, we're just going to run
yeah.
for it. And then, two, about, like, you always end up back there and everything. Like, psychologically, they have this whole thing with dreams with houses. Like, a house represents your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so the deeper you go in, the more you're trying
what?
To repress something.
Really?
Yeah. I have a ton of these dreams, so there's something there probably.
That's so cool.
But you have, so basically, like, how the house is, and if people are trying to get in your house, it's something, like, that's supposed to represent that someone is, something is trying to tell you something.
Yeah.
Like, yourself is trying to tell you something, and then if you go deeper and deeper, it means you're just trying to hide while that memory's trying to, like, catch up with you.
Yeah.
Ain't that something?
So, maybe, I don't know if maybe that was the whole thing of the house. I mean, I'm sure, obviously, the Devil's Tower, but it could also be, like, that's his mind.
Well, I think the Devil's Tower was the, like, horror conduit for that idea.
Yes. Yeah. Which that's a very good way to put it.
Yeah, which is, you know, you can't escape this part of you. Like, he looks back and sees, you know, himself in the house. That's the part of him that's always going to be watching him. Like,
yeah.
He cannot outrun it. He can't just leave the house because he is the house.
And yeah. Also, the thing I love about any horror movie, what they do is when they do things that I would do, like smart things, we're all like,
yes,
just leave. Like,
and then they do. And then you
and
realize
then
that they can't leave. And
yeah.
So,
and
because
they're
that.
Still screwed.
And that was what was interesting to me, because I thought, okay, so the house is like Haunting of Hill House. It's going to want all of them.
Yeah.
All three of them have to stay here now. And so when the wife actually left, I was like, okay, I'm fascinated.
Like,
what's happening now? Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. And once I realized, no, it's just him. He's the only one that needs to stay here. Oh, that was really cool.
Which, shout out to Samuel. It took everything in me to contain my, like, yes, you've got it. When he was like, that's Kevin Bacon.
Well, so
the
he... he mysteriously gives Theo a drafting triangle and tells him to measure the right angles, leaving Theo confused. Theo wrestles with feelings of jealousy and mistrust towards Susanna. One evening, while she's taking a bath, Theo checks the messages on her phone and laptop.
Don't do that, people.
Yeah, all of us were, like, cringing as that was happening. We were like, unless your partner is, like, aware of it, and y'all are both just like, yeah,
unless,
I mean, we don't
care.
Unless
you have,
like,
hard evidence of you know something is going on. Just don't go down that route. It's,
no.
But he did know that something was going on.
Well, he suspected.
He suspected.
He
didn't have hard
feelings,
evidence.
But he didn't have any sort of evidence.
Yeah.
He didn't know it.
But he caught her cheating. Ooh.
After that.
After.
Right.
Because he checked it
first. But he caught her
cheating.
Yes, but see, the thing is...
But he was right, is what you're saying?
I'm
not necessarily saying
he's
right, but he caught her cheating.
No, what I'm saying is Tyler is doing the thing where I saw the smile, and he's trying to stir up garbage. Because that's the Tyler way of doing things. I can tell you from personal experience with jealousy issues, even if you have evidence, maybe approach it a different way.
Yep.
Yes.
What do you think is the appropriate response?
Just confronting
Talk.
Them?
Yep.
Just being like, hey, 100%. I think this thing is happening. I want you to tell me. Can I... And even ask... Like, just be like, hey, you know, I'm having some trust issues right now. Is it possible, like, with us both sitting here, for me to look through and see, and just for my own personal, like, sanity, and just, like, make sure. And if they're, like, you know, if they freak out, or if they're, like,
then
no.
That tells you
or,
everything you need
or,
to tell
or,
yeah,
or
exactly.
If they're
That's
giving
the
you,
point.
Like, the whole, like, yeah, just give me a second. Like, then it's, like, why do I need to just open it in front of me? Let me
see
it.
I knew that. I was just making sure y'all knew
that. You know, if you have to go through the phone, you just ask. You just say, you know, hey, Danielle, I think you're cheating on me. Can I go through your phone? And
sure.
She goes, sure, here you go.
Here
and
you
hands
go.
It to me.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the thing, is that regardless, it makes it more irritating because he is, like, 50-something. That is an irritating thing to watch.
But here's the thing. He was also so smart about it.
Where really
he,
was.
He opened all the messages, and then he went on her laptop and marked them as unread. I was like, that is the smartest boy.
Which,
like,
what does that tell you?
Danielle's like, write that down, write that down.
What does that tell you? That tells you he's done it before.
Yeah,
yeah, that also, this is not the first time.
Also,
or he's smart.
He's speaking to her the whole time to know where she is in the room.
So he's like, yeah, you have enough shit? Okay, so you're washing your hair right now? Perfect. It's going to take her a minute to get back in here because she has to rinse the soap out. Here we go.
And
like,
he's asking her questions to hear how far away her voice is.
Yeah, make sure,
like,
she's not getting out.
I was like, oh my gosh, flashbacks.
But that is, like, you know, the moral relativism aside, I do like that they wrote that in, that he is smart.
Yeah.
You know
I
mean? It is nice to see in horror
movies. Well, I mean, you also see that
idiots.
They're both smart.
Both
because
she had two phones.
She honestly, for a minute there, I was like, again, when she pulls out the second phone and he's watching her, I was sitting there like, is that real?
Yeah.
Is that real, or is that the house leading him to believe that she's a cheater? But then he went outside and, like, confronted her and she admitted to it. So I was like, okay, so it is real.
Here's
like,
the only thing I'll say back on the moral, like, aspect of it. He knew exactly who it was, too.
Yeah.
He's just like, it's Max from the Mexico shoot.
I mean, I feel like just, you know, in a relationship, you kind of always know.
Yeah.
You know who the threat is, and you're, and like, you know who makes you feel insecure.
What I'm saying is, y'all don't have the evidence that he didn't know have evidence.
If he had had evidence, he would have already ended it.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
We saw as soon as he had evidence, it was over.
You can lead a horse to water.
But you can't make him swim.
But you can't make him swim with cheaters.
The big thing that is to tie it all together, look at what happened the second he confronted her with hard evidence. She folded.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah, she's like, you're right.
Moral of the story, anybody at home, don't go through your significant other's phone.
Unless you really want to.
Just confront them, have a conversation, and be like, hey, I think this is happening. I know that you're probably going to, you know, try to lie to me. Mm-hmm. Can we just look?
Yeah.
And see what the truth is.
And what's even worse is, like, he found it without even looking for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just genuinely wanted to tell his significant other, like, oh, yeah, y'all are so cute.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And there's second
So nothing happened by him snooping is all I'm saying.
But it's still not good.
No, it is not
good. I'm just trying to stir the pot. I actually...
saw that, like, he said... darn it, or
yeah, dag nabbit.
I was like, I felt that on such a deep level, because I've literally had, you know, like, when it's something so, like, your worst fear is, like, confirmed, or
something awful happened,
and your reaction is, like, it's not over the top, you're yelling and screaming, but you don't not say anything either, it's just that, like, oh, darn it, I was right, and my world was crumbling, and I saw this sport, like, coming for me. I was like, that reaction was so good, because I was like, I have literally done that.
Theo had that reaction, too. Theo had that reaction. She's like, can you just yell and scream like a normal person?
No,
thanks. He's like, yeah, I'm good. Well, because, like, that's the thing, right? Is it's not the blind, searing rage of that moment. It's the cold, quiet dread of, wow.
My worst fears have been confirmed. Yeah. As the constant worst-case scenario person who always looks at what is the worst thing that could happen here, I, like, always, whenever that is suddenly confirmed, I'm very just like, yeah, saw it coming.
Yeah.
I hate that it's real, but yeah, like, that's about right.
Man, Kevin Bacon kills that scene.
He really did.
Like, can you just
he just killed this
and
role.
Goes,
no.
No.
No, I'm not going to.
I'm
not going to
do that.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, so Theo has a dream that night and sees someone has written in his journal, "You should leave. Go now." The following morning, as he watches Susanna and Ella playing outside, he texts her. At the same time, he sees Susanna look at her phone. He hears a text vibration on the kitchen counter and finds an identical phone with his messages on the screen. Realizing she has a secret phone, he suspects she has been cheating on him. He confronts her, and she admits to an affair with another actor. Theo asks her to leave for the night, and she goes into town to stay at an inn. He returns to his journal to see that someone has now written, "You should have left, now it's too late." Upon discovering an anomaly in the angle between the wall and the floor, they measure the kitchen and find that it is larger inside than outside. Which, again, represents the idea of, like, there's something that he just can't, like, that he can't make himself look at.
Well, and also brilliant with the first line when they walk in being, wow, it's almost like it's bigger on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. And I love the very, like, subtle, his daughter being like, how does that work? And he just goes, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
Not only that. What got me was the math. Oh, the fact that they actually did, like, math, and they're just like, whoa, hold on, stop. Stop everything. Stop the crazy. Let's get the tape measure, and let's take a look at this. I don't, like, that just made the dad part of my heart so happy that the dad was just like, I'm gonna solve this with a tape measure and a right angle. I'm just like, yay!
It very much subverts
it's so cool.
The whole, like, horror thing of, like, them just looking at it and going, it's bigger on the inside than the outside.
I don't understand.
Like, it's super good.
It's like, he's like, no, I have quantifiable proof that this is bad.
Yeah.
Oh, well, gosh, I love that.
Ella and Theo get separated. The two of them appear to be experiencing separate visions in the dream world. Once reunited, Theo calls Susanna, wanting her to come back and take him and Ella away from the house, but her phone is turned off. He then calls the shopkeeper, inquiring whether he knows of any cab services in the area.
And there was also a rough moment where the kid asks, well, why don't you call our second phone?
And he's like, I don't have that number.
Because the kid,
shut up.
The kid knew the whole time.
Yeah, the kid knew she had two phones because, I mean, she's outside, like, probably holding both at the same time. And the kid's just like, oh, that's normal. Like, yeah, what a brutal moment for him. Which also, you know, that moment of him calling her and her not answering to be able to take them away was, in my opinion, the representation of, like, essentially trying to rely on an outside force to save you from this thing and not looking at it yourself.
There are so many good, like, small messages. Like, that particular moment is a very big, like, anti-codependency thing. And it's like, let's go.
Where the house is like, no, you have to deal with me. Yeah. Like, you don't get to just run off to your partner and get lost in them. Like, you have to figure this out.
I have a question. When his daughter, when she was trapped in that, like, what you just said, when they were trapped in the dream world, and she sees his ex-wife in the tub, do you think that was him, like, dreading her finding out the truth? Or do you think that it was showing that Ella actually knew that her dad
I don't really think it was necessarily either. I think it was that she knew that the woman had died in the bathtub, but in the vision she never saw, like, her dad in there. You know, she sees that other man, but he doesn't look like her dad at that point. And so, you know, in her mind, you know, that vision of, like, this guy doesn't look like my dad, so that's not my dad, you know. And like, seeing the woman, I think it's just, like, the beginnings of what he was afraid of, like, her life starting to be affected by this reality of what happened in his past, and starting to think about, like, you know, what's the truth, what's not, people think it's this, I think it's this, but do I? And, like, you know, seeing all of that, that's what I think it was, like, her personal starting to actually, like, develop all of this, I guess, I don't know, just all of these thoughts about it. I don't necessarily think it was, like, him in that moment, because I do think that they did mess with the daughter in the house, too, and that was, like, part of the point, was that his past is going to mess with her, just as a direct result of being his daughter. Mm. But that was my thought to it. Yes, the shopkeeper replies that there are none, and speaks of the house cryptically, saying that the devil collects souls from there. Desperate to escape the house, Theo and Ella decide to go to town by foot, but seeing a shadowy figure observing them from inside as they walk away from it. After some time, they find they have circled back to the house. Seeing no other option, they stay there for the night, but Theo enters the dream world again and sees his and Susanna's past selves as they first arrived at the house. He then meets Settler, who has taken Ella captive. He takes Theo's form to taunt him and says he will return Ella on the condition that Theo does what he must.
Yeah, and this is the interstellar portion of the movie.
Yeah, very much so.
Which I have to say, this entire scene is shot in such an erratic way that the reveal of it being him as the prosthetics come off is so unexpectedly jarring in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. I love this scene.
Well, Ella is returned, relieving Theo. The next day, Susanna returns to the house, and Theo gives her Ella. He finally confesses to the true circumstances surrounding the death of his first wife. He didn't directly kill her, but he didn't help when she was drowning. He simply watched her die because he had been miserable with her for so long. He accepts that he belongs in the house. Theo's spirit is then seen trapped inside the house, revealing he had been the figure watching himself and Ella leave the night before, having tried to warn his past self by writing the messages in his journal. The shopkeeper's voice says that some people don't leave the house, and that the place finds them anyway.
Yikes.
And that was You Should Have Left.
Yeah.
Such a good movie.
And truth be told, what I found really cool, and I waited to get there because I didn't remember where we were in the plot, but if you notice, the house starts going nuts the moment that same resentment starts to build with his wife he has currently.
Yeah.
Because if you read the journal, he's getting more and more frustrated, like, always on her phone. He's letting that silent resentment, that's slowly unclasping the hinges of past grief, and that's whenever the house starts to go a little cockeyed, gets wider on the inside.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't catch that.
The other big overarching thing that I think goes very unnoticed by a lot of people, but I'm sure you guys noticed it. The sort of like self-help stuff he's listening to, mm-hmm. every time that it comes on, it is pertinent to the exact situation that is happening.
Well, and it also sometimes goes into, there was a moment, I'm trying to remember exactly what it said, where it was talking about, like, you know, you need to know that your fears and jealousy is all unfounded.
Are all valid.
Unless it isn't.
Yeah. And it's unless like, it's actually God. Real.
What kind of self-help is that? Feel better, unless you can't.
What? That's, like, actually his... like logical brain.
Oh, I fully thought that was just like his brain. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Being like, oh, but actually.
And it's all very, very much foreshadowed at the beginning when he's sitting by the pool and it's like you're trying to find Pete, and in the middle of the word peace, the phone rings or the phone buzzes.
Not only that, it was her phone.
Yeah, it was her phone.
So his peace was interrupted
by her phone.
By
and if that isn't a message.
Yeah. This is gonna get out of pocket for no reason.
Well, what would you guys rename You Should Have Left?
Don't it's too late.
It's too late!
Apologize.
Devil's Tower would be interesting.
That's a really good one.
Okay.
The house you can't leave because you're not allowed to leave because it's the house.
Cringe.
That's the best name I think I've ever heard from.
Thanks. No.
Thing to say the Moose Movie 2.
Moose Movie 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Cheaters never prosper.
No. Oh.
Hey, I see what he did there.
But say Tyler's really stuck on this whole she cheated thing.
Yeah, she did a bad thing.
You have some repressed memories.
Do we need to talk about this?
Do you need to talk about something?
Yeah, I have big betrayal issues. I'll play tennis with y'all, yeah.
Get in line.
Tyler, betrayal issues?
Tyler, man. Which was worse, him letting his wife die or her cheating? Go.
You see how it takes a minute.
Yeah, the listeners at home couldn't see, but my face was like, whoa. Okay, honestly.
He's actually taking this seriously.
The cheating because she actually did it. She actually did a thing. As opposed to the letting her die, which was in action, which is also really bad.
So let's keep an eye on Tyler's future wife.
Yes.
Mark that as the day Tyler ruined his future.
Also, I think you could argue the cheating took multiple different instances of choosing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
His was one moment of choosing.
One moment of weakness.
One moment that ended a life.
Yeah.
Whereas cheating doesn't end a life. If anything,
but
it might bring another life into the world.
Okay, so we'll say one big moment. But one moment.
Okay, so renaming the
movie. Yes.
That's not worth a test.
To be honest with you.
We get it.
Lame answer is perfect title already. But the non-lame answer, honestly, I don't think it's better than Devil's Tower. I think that's the best you can do.
Okay.
I think that's really good. Like, Samuel caught me off guard there. I was like, dang, bro.
What about Point Break?
Moving on.
John.
The only other one I could think of is The Ant in the Cathedral.
Oh.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Good.
Do you have one, Mimi?
What about just ants?
All the ones I'm thinking of are super lame, but the only one is like maybe like Getaway.
Yeah, yeah.
Get Out.
Because it's like, you know, we want to go to this beautiful getaway house in Wales.
Ah,
and also,
that's good.
You know,
that's good.
Get Out.
I was going to go with Open the Door.
Oh, that's good.
Because that third door shows up so often.
Doors are very prevalent.
Dude, Russell caught that immediately. I was like, oh, thank you.
He's like, don't go through the door.
Wait, what did Russell
do? The third door.
As soon as the third door came up when he was sitting in the study, because there was only two to begin with, and that third one pops up, the first time I watched it, I didn't notice it.
Oh,
and then
snap.
I had to watch it the second time and be like, that third door.
And Russell was just like, the door was there, the door was there.
Alert.
Well, I went on Amazon.
Is that right, Russell?
I went on Amazon. The general consensus is pretty rough for this movie. Only 46% of viewers rated it 5 stars.
Wow.
It has some pretty rough stuff. So do y'all want positive or negative first?
So negative and then end on a good note.
Yeah.
Okay.
Agreed.
So this is from someone named Frank. And this is in 2020.
Ugh. Frank.
And he titles it in all caps, as bad as it could possibly get. So strap in, guys. I'm a huge supporter of Kevin Bacon and his work over the years. Some good, some bad, some ugly. I watched them all, and no matter what, found something enjoyable in everything. That being said, there is absolutely nothing redeemable about this film whatsoever. That's in all caps. It is beyond terrible, and if you not only spend your money, but even your time watching this pile of garbage, you will forever have a horrible grudge against Kevin Bacon for the rest of your days. And this is where they didn't do any research. I got the impression that perhaps he was trying to resolve some personal issues of his life by expressing himself on this film, but as a viewer, it is just so repulsive to watch in the way that you literally want the time refunded back to your life. It is so terrible, folks. I know that many of you are going to watch it just to find out for yourselves like I did. I feel for you in advance. 1 star.
Well, you're repulsive.
Man, they need to hire him at, like, Rotten Tomatoes.
that man took that movie at face value, and that was it.
That was it, yeah. He didn't look deeper. He didn't do any... And then he also did no research, because you just look up that this was based on a book. Because he was like, yeah, this is just Kevin Bacon working out his issues. And I was like, this was him acting a role that was written in a book.
So you look at the fun fact, this could have been played by Nicolas Cage.
This could have been
not his
Nick
personal
Cage.
Issues.
Yeah. It's Nicolas Cage's issues.
It's Nicolas Cage's issues.
It was written for Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage would need a much longer movie with much more chaos to resolve his issues.
Yeah, it's called The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Well, the positive review was actually only a month after that review. It's from someone named Danny D, so I'm going to choose. This is Danny DeVito. And it was titled, "It's Not About the Destination, But the Journey." I'm a little shocked by some of the bad reviews for this. I don't know if people were expecting a slasher flick or a CGI tentpole. I don't get it. I thought it was a great story with a supernatural twist. If you enjoyed Stir of Echoes, you will like this. The end of the movie is a foregone conclusion. I think that is what is confusing some people. This movie is not about the destination. It is about the character that Bacon plays, coming to grips with, and accepting his fate. That's the story. It's a film about regret and about paying the piper when he comes calling. If you keep that in mind, you will enjoy it. You are supposed to know the end at the beginning. The movie is about the struggle. 5 stars.
Struggle is so well written.
That's, yeah. Yes.
I thought that was cool.
Yes. Yes to that.
It did not win any awards, which doesn't surprise me because 2020. What do you guys think this is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes?
I cannot answer this as I know.
Yeah, because Samuel and Tyler, Samuel and John ruined it.
Yeah.
Really, it was me. I said it out loud.
So the only people that can play are you and Tyler.
I do not ever, so big note, I never look at the scores on Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb because they always infuriate me.
Yeah.
Movie critics are some of the worst freaking human beings when it comes to asking about movies.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
I would know I played one. I'd rather just experience it yourself.
Critically acclaimed rating, or the critical rating from like any movie critic, I'm going to say, because they're all chills and awful, 40% at max.
Okay.
Can't be much higher. I'm gonna go with 40.
Horse method?
Not today. 49. I don't feel it.
Colton got it correctly. Like, exactly right. It was 40%.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's
and so now everyone can participate. The audience score out of 100.
Audience score. Are they audiences of Frank's or audiences of Danny DeVito's is the question we all must answer.
That's a good question. That's the big question.
I'm going to go 50%.
Okay.
I'm going to go 52.
Okay.
Price of writing them. Okay.
I'm going to go 53. No, I'll go 57.
Probably better. I hope.
I'm going to say 66%.
Okay.
I think people are stupid, so I'm going to say 49.
So Samuel, what did you say?
50.
Yeah, in that case, Mimi got it because it's woo! 25.
Whoa! Wow.
The critics liked it more than the people.
That's a shocker.
What the?
I thought it was going to be higher because this is probably how it works.
Cringe. And now wow. IMDb out of 10, and this can be a decimal.
Out of 10.
It's decimal out of 10, so it'd be like 3.3 or
1.5.
2.5. Okay. 4.1.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 3.5.
Okay.
Happy medium between two critics.
I don't want to price this right anybody, but we're all over it. I'll go 4.5.
2.7.
What did you say, Samuel?
4.2.
Well, in that case, Tyler gets it because it was a 5.4. It's a little
Let's
higher.
Go. My first time ever.
Oh my gosh! In the new year.
These ratings are defying all logic of ratings.
All over the place.
That's insane, man.
The budget for this movie, we don't have box office, obviously, because this is 2020, but the budget for this movie was $4 million, which, considering the fact that they had big actors and that big
I'm sure that was entirely spent in paying the actors and the set.
Yeah, and like paying to film at the house,
cost-effective movie.
Yeah, for real. I already kind of threw in the fun facts earlier. So, who would we play in this movie?
Oh, God. That's a really... really
I think John one. Susanna.
John is Susanna. Well, it actually lines up because John's personal life, actually not to reveal too much, he's currently sleeping with a man named...
Kevin Bacon.
Max from Mexico.
I think Tyler's the shopkeeper. I'm gonna be real with you. Tyler is as much as you identify with Kevin Bacon, I think you are the shopkeeper in spirit.
Slow and methodical?
I didn't even say methodical, I'd say slow and
cryptic.
Yeah, cryptic.
Slow and cryptic.
I think both Tyler and Samuel could play Kevin Bacon's character very well.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a tiny cast.
It is a very small cast.
Really tiny cast.
I'm hesitant to say anybody beat Ella because, she's a little girl.
Yeah. I think I want to be the guy who is not letting Kevin Bacon come on.
I was going to put that as Colton. I was going to give Colton that.
And then I was going to give Mimi the random chick in the town who's
the
there for 2 seconds. Who's just like, what are you doing?
Settler's house, right?
No, Mimi's the assistant, Josh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Josh.
Oh, yeah, because Josh is in there. Yeah.
Josh is so funny. And then Amanda's just like, like off screen for like 15 minutes. Like, stop laughing at this text. It's not that funny.
Danielle's the girlfriend. For no other reason other than...
Susanna?
What, Susanna?
Yeah.
Oh.
The wife.
Yeah.
I was about to say, they're married,
the
bro.
Girl
yeah. The girlfriend? The girl wife?
No, Max's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Ha! Yes, she is technically Max's a girlfriend. Well, what would be the drinking game for this? We need three rules.
Every time I identify with Kevin Bacon, take a drink.
That's too much.
Too personal. Too personal.
That they open a door and go into a room they weren't supposed to be in.
Take a drink. Take a
that's
drink.
That's a really good one.
All right, take a shot.
Take a shot whenever someone says something cryptic about the house. Because that only happens like two or three times.
Yep, and then and then finish your drink every time you see where the photo was. Like, where the photo was taken.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That happens, like, two or three times.
Yeah, that doesn't happen too often.
People gonna die.
Well, favorite and least favorite moments from this one.
Oh, man. I think
we pulled when it ended.
Yeah, we got it. So, Samuel, do you want to start?
My favorite moment was... I think just the reveals there and, like, the big montage when you realize that he was the one writing in his own journal and all of that. That was pretty freaking cool.
That was really cool.
And then my least favorite was, I don't know. Least favorite's hard, because I really enjoyed it from beginning to end. There was never a moment when I was watching it that I was like, I'm not enjoying this right now. So I don't know that I have a least favorite, honestly.
Wow, okay.
Let's go.
Favorite was the darn it moment, for sure. and the least favorite... I mean, again, it was all good, but if I had to, like, pick one, it probably would be, I feel like the sex scene in the car with them.
That was gonna be mine, yeah.
It was just kind of, I feel like it was there just to, like, be there.
I don't know, I felt like it showed, for me, I felt like it showed their relationship very well.
Well,
like, it set up a lot of the, like, relationship stuff that would come into play later.
Well, and that's kind of what I was going to say with it being my least favorite, that the only reason it was my least favorite is just because sex on screen makes me uncomfortable. But I did still feel like it had a purpose being there. I didn't feel like it like, if it was gratuitous, we would have seen a lot more and, you know, like, we would have actually seen her, like, naked and everything, which we didn't. And I think
I knew it was coming.
And so I do think it had that purpose, especially when she was like, yeah, I think you're done. And then she's like, no, I'm just, like, greedy. And you see, like, his insecurity as well as her, like, not totally being as fulfilled as she wants to
be. And
she
even just straight up said, I'm greedy.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, you are, nerd.
But that was interesting. And so I was like, it did still have a character moment, but I do agree that if I had to pick something, that would be my least favorite, just because I was kind of like, you know, I don't like watching just straight up someone, like, writing a d- that's not fun for me.
Writing a d-
Appreciate
fair.
That.
That's fair. Favorite moment has got to be just for the entirety of how Kevin Bacon acted the scene, the confrontation of her cheating,
mm-hmm.
and him just keeping that quiet rage going on. That was an amazing friggin' moment. Props to Kevin Bacon. Least favorite, it's just got to be how jarring the scene with the lady in the car is. Every time I watch it, I go, why? Why is this here? It's such a good movie, save for that 20-second moment.
Johnny Boy?
I think favorite moment for me was the ending. Him parting ways with the daughter. Because because for those kind of endings, especially with psychological horrors, it shows that what happened to him could either be all in his headspace, and whatever happened outside of it could have just been just a normal little vacation, and he was mentally working through stuff, or that all actually happened to him, and he's parting ways for that exact reason.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, the ending is conclusive. Honorable mention has to be the confrontation when he tries to get on set of just rolling, and just the soft...
I'm standing right here.
And just
rolling!
The quiet frustration.
I'm 3 feet from you.
That's what it was.
Least favorite moment has to be... The car scene's up there, but for me, my least favorite, because it felt like the only like really like plot-splaining moment, was the glasses lady at the car.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, we kind of got that already from, you know, the shopkeep.
Yeah.
Your purpose is kind of mute.
Yeah.
So, I just didn't like that, just because it was really plot-splaining, but the car scene's definitely up there for sure.
I will say that my favorite moment was all the hot, steamy sex scenes. I want more. No, because I don't think Hollywood can portray the female orgasm.
That is such a funny line.
Everyone's slow headpan over to me when they said that was very
revealing. Well, we looked at you because you looked at all of us at the exact same time.
I was waiting for everybody's faces to be matching my gaze in that moment. My favorite scene, honestly, as weird as this may sound, it was him going through that, like, fun house of awful and going, we're leaving. I'm not doing this. We're leaving. With a very, very close second being the confrontation to the cheating. I thought the way he played that was really cool. Least favorite of the movie would probably be... It's him going to the shopkeep because I was getting upset for him. I'm sitting there just like, I get it, man. Hurry up. Like, he's got places to be. I'm watching this movie, but come on.
Well, you know, my least favorite's already been said because, by the car and then also in the car. Both of those have kind of already been said. My favorite, I had a lot of them. Trying to remember. Because I went through like 8 while y'all were going around, like thinking of different ones.
It's all the good ones.
One that hasn't really been said that I really liked was when he has just put Ella in the car to go away. And he goes to Susanna and she's like, you know, are you not coming with us? Because she clearly, you know, it also showed some of the, I guess, complexities of, you know, of her. And that she wasn't just like, yeah, okay, you know, this is done. Like, she actively, like, wanted to talk and, like, try to work through it and all of that. And there was that, like, you know, that guilt and that love for him that was still there. And then him just, you know, finally laying it all out and being like, I've lied to both of you at this point, like, and I've been lying to myself. You know, I may not have put her in the bathtub and shoved her head under, but I sure didn't pull her out. And that's, like, the moment when she realizes just how, like, how much he needs to recover on his own. And that she can't help him. Right. And, like, the look on her face when he, like, finishes telling her and she just kind of, like, gets really serious and like nods, that moment I loved, because she was just like,
she's just like, this guy's gonna kill me.
Well, I mean, I don't even think it was that. I think it was her being like, he has to deal with this without me.
And there's a solid moment, and that beautifully acted, that you can still see she still loves him.
Yeah.
So it's not like a sudden flip of like, you're a monster.
Oh, bad word.
Not bad. You're a monster.
You got a couple of them now.
You're a monster, and now I hate you. It's still, she loves him, but she understands.
Yeah.
It's
great.
Also,
I love that.
Also, said, I knew you were only, like, borrowed.
That was like, tragic.
Like,
me.
I, yeah.
That was a really good line, and I think it's the whole, like, if you feel guilty and you feel like you're a monster, you don't believe that you deserve good things.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really good.
Well, either that or a little bit more self-aware. He's just like, I'm an old guy. I'm an old rich guy. And you're an attractive young actress. Let's be real for a second. This was never going to work. You were borrowed. Like, you were going to go find some young stud.
And even that phrase, you can see, like, breaks her. Yeah. Because she does actually love him. And so, like, you know, that moment of, like, please don't say that right now, like, actually messes with her. But that had to be my favorite. Out of 10 wrong angles, what would you rate You Should Have Left?
I'm going to give it a solid 8.5 out of 10. Really enjoyed it. It did a lot of things well. There was really nothing that detracted points for me, as just as much as, like, it was a cool concept and it was very well done, but, like, you know, it's not a 10 out of 10 for me. It's not, like, my favorite movie ever, but it was definitely a very, very well done psychological horror. So, yeah, 8.5 out of 10.
Okay.
I'd probably say 8, because, like, 10, I think of, like, the best movie I've ever seen in my life. So, it's not because it's bad. It's just, like, when I'm actually looking at the scale, you know, it just kind of makes sense.
Yeah, like, sometimes it's just, you know, like, a quality you can't put your finger on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'll say this after, but I would give it 9 wrong angles out of 10.
Okay.
Because I think in modern horror, and especially modern psychological horror, it is close to the pinnacle of modern psychological. It's not quite there, but it's almost there, which I like.
It's also because 9.0 is 90 degrees for a right
angle.
Exactly.
And it's right. I gave it a right wrong
the angle. That's Colton's thing. He's got the angle method.
Yeah, the angle
method. The angle method.
Coined right now.
I'm going to give it, I'll give it 8.8 wrong angles. It's very good, very well done psychological horror. I love the cinematography, especially the grainy texture over the bathtub, where it just kept popping up, giving it that dream aesthetic. Yeah. That glimpse into the past kind of was super cool. Acting was solid, casting was great. Again, for the popular reason, it wasn't like, you know, wasn't up there for me, but I mean, I'd watch it again. It has great rewatchability.
My method is always a little different. If 5 is a perfectly inoffensive, very, by definition, mid-movie, 1 is the worst movie ever, 10 is the best movie, or 10 is one of the best movies ever. I honestly put this in at a respectable 7.5 to 8 out of 10. I definitely think this movie has its, like, movie-making flaws. There were some parts where it felt a little rushed. The ending could be criticized as a little on the ham-fisted side, but I didn't care. I had fun. It's not about its faults. It's about what makes this movie strong. It's about the story that it's trying to tell. It knew exactly what its objective was. It went in, it told it, and it left. And I have a lot of respect for movies and the production teams that respect us in our time and not belabor us with nonsense. So I really appreciated that. So I'm gonna say 8. I'm gonna stick with 8.
It's very accessible to non-horror fans.
Yeah. The parts that scared me didn't scare me so bad that I would, like, have nightmares, but they were scary.
I think I'm gonna be right there with Samuel, with a nice, solid 8.5. And it's not because anything was messed up for me. It's not because, like, you know, oh, it was, like, you know, there was something wrong with it. It's just that that's what feels right. For some ineffable reason. I really enjoyed it. I love this kind of very heady, what's real, what's not real kind of concept, at our Total Recall episode. I love that kind of stuff where it's all, you know, you can interpret it as all in their head, or you can interpret it as they actually lived through this, and both answers are just as correct as the other. But I love stuff like that. This is definitely one that if you like horror, if you like just like psychological thrillers or horrors or anything like that, like Colton said, this is very accessible. So definitely, you know, watch it if you're a fan of horror, thriller, you know, sort of heady concepts like that. It does have, you know, some sexual content. So, you know, like teenagers would be good to watch it, but not like kids.
Yeah, but it's super hot, so it's whatever.
Well, especially with some of the violence, which there isn't much, but the violence that is there is pretty brutal, so maybe don't, like, watch it with young children. Yeah, aside from that, I think that's everything that we have for today, guys.
Indeed.
Just a reminder, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment and on Twitter at @artists_mad. We have finally started rehearsals for our next show.
Check out our cast announcements to see our amazing people.
So yeah, follow all those socials so that you can actually see you know, who's gonna be in the show, and just, you know, we're putting out a lot of really interesting things as far as just, you know, as the show is going through its rehearsal process, and you definitely want to check it out.
There's a really hot shirtless scene in it.
Oh.
There's going to be a shirtless scene.
Here's the thing. We don't even know if that's going to happen.
Right. Get us in the comments, okay?
No, he mentioned this for the first time to me yesterday, and this is the fourth time I've heard about it. Because
he can't stop talking about it. He's very excited.
I went to the gym this morning.
If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests that you want us to review in the future, you can shoot us a DM on any of those socials, or you can email us at bannerbox.madartists@gmail.com. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. It helps us out a lot. And we will see you guys next week. Bye!